Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
And welcome to the November edition of Wireless, a series all about radio broadcast on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital broadcasting, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on this month's edition of Wireless, as Ireland celebrates 30 years of licensed independent radio, we feature one local commercial station, East Coast FM in Wicklow. We bring you a report from the recent Crail Festival of Community Radio and learn about one long-standing station, Phoenix FM in West Dublin, and we hear about the work of the Refugee Radio Network.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
We've spoken a lot on Wireless over the last year about the 30th anniversary since the close down of Ireland's pirate radio stations at the end of 1988. So obviously it's also 30 years since the licensing of independent radio in Ireland, beginning with the commercial stations, which came on the air from the middle of 1989. Here in the west of Ireland, we've recently had the 30th anniversary of Midwest Radio in Mayo, Clare FM and indeed Galway Bay FM, which was originally launched as Radio West in 1989. It's been an interesting 30 years with spectacular successes and spectacular failures, and indeed the whole story of independent radio in Ireland and its development remains to be told. On the east coast of the country, after my teenage pirate experience, my first foray into legal radio was with Horizon Radio in County Wicklow, which is now East Coast FM. So in the spirit of finding out more about some of the independent stations in Ireland, how they have developed so far and what are their future plans for development, I caught up with Sean Ashmore, a director of East Coast FM and former CEO of the station, and asked him to tell me about the background to first Horizon and now East Coast Radio.
The start of the station back in 1989 is maybe a little bit different, and kind of different from how people remember. Back in October 89, the station launched as a North Wicklow station, under the name Horizon Radio. And it was unusual but not unique in that it was a community cooperative that was running the station, similar to the setup in Kilkenny at around about the same time. However, it wasn't a successful model, and it ran into difficulties, as did a number of stations at the time. In 1990, a station launched in South Wicklow called Easy 103, but by late 91, both of those stations had merged to form East Coast, a single service for the entire county of Wicklow. So it had difficult, turbulent birth, as we like to say, and faced challenges in the early 90s, again, like other stations would have. And it wasn't until around mid-90s that it became profitable and probably fully established. And since then, it's really kind of kept the same kind of form from a listenership point of view as a commercial radio station operating for a single county adjacent to Dublin.
So just to look back then at some of those early years briefly, Sean, was part of the problem, do you think, that essentially Horizon Radio was very much a community ethos station and perhaps that it didn't suit the kind of commercial local broadcasting model that was being rolled out at the time?
Well, I think there were a number of issues. I mean, Horizon as a new station came on the air alongside Capital Radio in Dublin, which, you know, would have been overlapping into the North Wicklow area, alongside 98FM, Century Radio, and others that were popping up around about the same time. Stations like 98FM, I suppose, historically did very well at the outset with what was probably fair to say a very simple and focused offering. The challenge that Horizon had is that everybody on the air was a volunteer. It doesn't mean that they weren't very professional in many ways, but the range of quality of program did vary hugely. It was also trying to be all things to all men, which works very well in a community cooperative scenario, but it doesn't really drive the audience. And when your audience is what drives advertising revenue, and advertising revenue is what pays the bills. It ran into those challenges, I suppose, very, very quickly, that its origins pre-licensing was BLB, which was a well-renowned community cooperative structure that was very successful. But unfortunately, it didn't kind of translate into the legal world, where there was lots of new bills that hadn't been paid before.
And then from the mid-90s onwards, things changed. As you say, Easy 103, Horizon Radio came together to bring one local licensed radio station for Wicklow. So how did the direction of the station change after that?
Well, I suppose it was very commercially driven, and it wasn't that the station or the people in the station would have had, a particular agenda other than to establish a credible and viable, sustainable local service for County Wicklow. Always in the shadow of the big stations, if you like, from Dublin. In the mid-90s, actually, with the benefit of no commercial national competitors, but a very established and very strong RTE. So trying to cut out your niche locally. And, I think the thing for East Coast, like most stations around the country, being local and having local content is the calling card. It's the thing that sets you apart. And it's the thing that you really need to kind of, be known for and been seen to do. And that would have been the focus in the station at the time, to drive local news, to drive local content, and to be seen locally.
And of course, as you've said, the Dublin factor is very difficult, very challenging for stations like yourselves, for KFM in Kildare, for LMFM in Louth and Meath. Having the capital city with its greater offering on the doorstep is a very significant additional challenge.
Well, it is. But, it's a double-edged sword. And I suppose if you've been used to it for 30 years, maybe you'd prefer not to have it any other way. Dublin is very fragmented and very competitive. And I think, history has shown it's actually hard for any one station to kind of truly kind of win on localness in Dublin. I think it's important to be seen as a Dublin station. But, really, the biggest radio station in Dublin by a long stretch is RTÉ Radio 1. And as a talk station, focusing from a national point of view, it's clear that all Dublin news is national news and vice versa. Whereas when you're on the edge of Dublin, you have the overlap of all the services. You have the challenge of the fragmentation. You have the challenge also of, if you take Wicklow as an example, its local economy suffers somewhat from being close to Dublin, because a lot of the disposable spend in Wicklow gets spent in places like Dundrum or Grafton Street, which aren't that far away at all. But on the flip of it, East Coast has access to a larger market. There is some advertising books that come our way, in the opposite direction. And over the years, without doubt, it's had access to a great pool of talent that would be far harder to tap into if you were further outside Dublin.
Absolutely. The best example probably being Declan Meehan, who celebrated 25 years on air on his programme recently, of course, and we mentioned that last month. Sean, the terrain of Wicklow is difficult from a technical point of view.
Indeed. And I would say not just a technical point of view. It poses a number of kind of, social problems, in that the people of West Wicklow, the other side of the mountains from 70% of the population, are on the east, 30% on the west, naturally gravitate towards Naas or Carlow or even Talla. If you talk to somebody in West Wicklow and ask them when was the last time they were in Wicklow town, the answer might be never. So it is quite a split county. And the mountains do cause, a certain amount of challenge for FM transmission. East Coast, as a relatively small local station in a single county, operates six transmitters and actually has a seventh planned, which is in stark contrast to, say, a Dublin station that might have one transmitter on Three Rock and would cover an audience or a potential audience 10 times the size.
Absolutely. It's quite a different geographical situation and social, as you say. So moving on then finally to the question of the radio industry in general. Obviously, it's a very challenging time for traditional media, with fragmentation, with the migration of advertising revenue, especially to social media. How do you think East Coast FM and more broadly, local radio in general can weather the storm?
Well, I suppose it comes on a number of levels. Ironically, at the moment, I would say that audio is in boom time. Audio is hot. You've got smart speakers, Alexa, voice control, podcasting, all of that going on at the moment, which is great news for anybody who's in the audio industry. Radio, on the other hand, within the audio industry, is undergoing a lot of challenges to people's listening time, people's availability, and the huge amount of content that's now available off their phone or off their smart speaker from almost anywhere in the world. I would say that local content and being locally relevant to the listener is still a huge advantage to have. Curated content, whether that's music or speech, again, that's relevant to the listener is the huge advantage. So I think for local stations, and I would say like East Coast, but anywhere around the country, making their local content more accessible, more easily accessible, is going to be a huge factor for the future. Some other commentators use phrases like the transmitter mindset. And we have it. The industry was built on it. We push out some great content, and then we don't make it as easy for people to dip into it, to find it again, to share it, to recycle it, and to make it accessible. I think that's the challenge for radio. And if radio can kind of, you know, crack that nut, as it were, with an audience who's maybe tech-savvy, challenges are disappearing somewhat as that becomes easier, I think that's where the future is going to be. The other thing I'd say is that, you know, technology has made it easier and cheaper to do some of those things and to do some of the traditional things, you know, like overnight automation, an obvious example. Mm. But bouncing content around from various locations, having people who maybe don't work in the station but work remotely but can still produce broadcast quality audio and get it into the transmission system easy. I think all those things will be a bigger part of the future than they are right now.
And perhaps in that case, the JNLR methodology of listenership is perhaps becoming less important. Would you agree?
I'd say it's still, you know, it's the official measurement. It's a very important measurement. There's been a lot of, I suppose, questioning as to whether it's still kind of statistically robust. I would say it is statistically robust for the type of measurement that it is. But it's, you know, the JNLR is very much around how strong is your brand and how strong is your brand for people to want to associate themselves with it, so that when they're asked at their doorstep about what they listened to yesterday, they're happy to say you, that they remember it was you. In the States, when you look at some of the electronic measurement systems that have been used, you've seen markets turned on their head. That the stations or the presenters, the personalities, who it was, I don't know, a good thing to say you listened to, all of a sudden weren't doing as well. In some cases, music-intensive stations were rating much better than the ratings had suggested before. So I think the problem is when you change a measurement, you're now going to have a different method of measuring, and you're probably going to get different results. And that's probably one of the reasons why the JNLR, with so many, so many different stakeholders, has found it very hard to kind of adapt to any change, because usually a change means somebody's better off and somebody is not so well off after it. So as to where the JNLR goes, I don't know. But I do think that online listenership statistics, podcast download statistics, will become increasingly important.
Sean Ashmore of East Coast FM in Wicklow. You can listen online at eastcoast.fm. And we'll bring you information next month about a new book on the 30th anniversary of our neighbouring station, Clare FM.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
The annual Community Radio Ireland FEILA Gala Dinner and Achievement Awards took place on Friday and Saturday, October the 18th and 19th in Leixlip in West Dublin, and was attended by nearly 100 delegates from 21 community radio stations around Ireland. Among the topics discussed were community radio in the digital age, the role of community radio in advocating social justice and building stronger communities, the ethos of community radio and its place in the Irish media landscape, and community radio bridging the divide. And our station manager, Paula Healy, was at the FEILA this year. Paula, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Paula, can you tell us about some of these issues that were discussed at this year's Festival of Community Radio?
So I suppose this year they made a change from the traditional Craol FEILA, which is, I guess it's maybe it's been going for like 15 years, maybe 20 years at this stage. They moved away from just workshop-based because they thought it was a good time to look at the sector and decide what are the biggest issues, what are the biggest things we should be thinking about as community radio. So I guess the biggest things were looking at social benefit, because that's going to be huge over the next while, and that's part of what a lot of people were coming from various different points. I'm like, it could have been the Bridging the Divide one, that is social benefit, bringing cohesion and community together. But then Jack Byrne, Near FM co-op and one of the founders of Crail back in the day, he was talking about it being an alternative and it being something for the people. And Rosemary Day was talking about the challenges with social media, and she was excellent, really, really enjoyed that. She's got such a breadth of knowledge about the sector, and she's got a really good perspective on it.
And we know Rosemary from before, and she indeed spoke at a conference here in Galway in the summer as well about the future development of community radio.
And she really, really knows her stuff. And also she was involved, was the chair of Wired FM in Limerick, our sister station too. So she really is a good perspective on it. And then the last one was Father Sean Healy, and I should remember that because my surname is Healy. Anyway, he's from Social Justice Ireland, and he was talking about an outsider's kind of view of what social justice and what radio and community media could do about that. And he had a good insight. I think everybody had really, really prepped very well and understood the ethos of it, even if they weren't practitioners.
And what was his take as an outsider, as you say, because he's very much associated with kind of social inclusion in general and community capital and so on. But what was his take on radio?
Yeah. So he was talking about the vested interests of people who own other media, and the fact that community media was the only one that was actually owned by and made by and party to, and basically, you know, it's for the community. So he's looking at advocating for social justice and stronger communities, and to challenge what's out there already and offer an alternative to offer. So one of the quotes I liked was, "The need for reliable information that is accurately researched and presented has never been more important." That was one of his things that he said, and that's true. And he said that community radio is in a position to be that voice.
Absolutely. And there was also a speaker from Zimbabwe, Nikiwe Dube, who is working in Athlone Community Radio at the moment. So can you tell me about what he had to say?
Well, I'm like, I think Nikki was talking about basically, the community radio is a cocktail of different people, and you can join it to be part of the community. And community radio has got loads of responsibilities, because he started a community radio station in Zimbabwe, and then he moved over here, and now he's doing a fantastic show with Athlone Community Radio. And it was also his birthday that weekend, so happy birthday, Nikki. But he said basically community radio is everything from a therapist to a directory, and they give and take all of the value and information in an area, and also they have a responsibility to disseminate correct information, which would have been huge in Zimbabwe as well as an educational tool. But it's the same here as well, just finding out that information. So a lot of people were talking about community radio in the end of it as a place to find hopefully non-biased, true, in as far as something can be true, like truthiness, true as much as you can, well-researched news, and to be a place where you can go for that without the bias or without the agenda from owners or shareholders.
And of course that's very difficult given the limited resources, and I know something that has come up a lot at the community radio failure before, having attended in previous years, is the question of core funding for community radio. So Declan Gibbons, who's chair of Community Radio Ireland, did he have anything to say, Paula, about that topic?
Oh well, he did, and he ruffled a few feathers, but all to the good, because he knows what he's about. So the biggest thing Declan was trying to reiterate is that a number of years ago the then Minister for Environment, Climate Action and Communication was Dennis Nocton, and he announced that the levy was going to be abolished for community radio stations, because we are paying €750 a year plus VAT, which is like usually €922, just to exist. And that's going back to the BAI when you're nearly like it should be kind of coming the other way, if anything. And it's a huge burden on stations, that €1,000-ish. But then if, let's say for instance, if you have CE scheme people, or if you get a grant for refurbishing your buildings, you will have to pay out every single cent of that grant to the builders or to the staff, and you will have none of that left. But if you go over a certain threshold of €250,000 that year, just because you happen to get a grant for new buildings, you will effectively be taxed on that using the levy, and it will be much, much more than the £922.50 or whatever it is. And it basically means the stations like don't get any extra funding, don't employ any more people through CE or TUS or whatever it might be, don't get funding to refurbish your buildings, because you will get penalised for that. So that's the biggest thing. And he's saying not just the people that are under the threshold, he's saying all community radio needs to get that sorted.
And at what stage is the political lobbying at in relation to the levy?
Well, I mean, like it was with the Oireachtas. I think it was the start of October that all of this went to the Oireachtas, and was including the public service broadcasting charge and what the notion of public service was as well. So that was trying to get included and all that. And we did have a couple of people speaking up for community radio and a couple of people that understand it, which was excellent. So keeping pressure on that really and kind of keeping on top of people to see, because it was announced, it should have been should have gone through already, and it would make a huge difference to so many stations, especially the new smaller ones that are starting up. As for core funding, good luck, we're not sure. We do hope in future though that like they've announced with other sectors of community radio or other sectors of radio, that there is a journalist bursary available. So we're hoping that that will be extended to community radio to get good quality journalism fostered and developed in community radio stations as well from the ground up. And that will be grassroots kind of alternative journalism as
well.
And
would that mean paying a journalist professionally to work maybe for the entire community radio sector, maybe selling, sharing stories or whatever?
It could be, but I think it might be on a station by station basis. But that would all feed into our central news desk, which is run by Near FM, but community radio stations around the country will pool all of their news stories that can travel. And they'll send those out every Thursday. And we actually run the news desk on Fridays here ourselves. So that could be that. But I think what they're looking for, the bursary would be more somebody not totally graduate, but some, like, you know, people that are fresher or, like, you know, need a bit more experience, might be getting the bursary to work that out and to just get a bit of experience under their belt as well. That's how I see it working for community radio. Yeah,
very good. And of course, a big part of the community radio fela are the achievement awards, and we had a number of winners from Flirt FM. So can you tell us about some of the winners and some of the programming content that was deemed to be exemplary in the sector in Ireland at the moment?
Well, full disclosure, I was one of the four judges. However, I did not judge anything from Wired FM or from Flirt FM because I'd feel like, you know, I loved them both too much. So I'm delighted to say that the Helpling Show at Loughlin Scott won the best, I think it was best community awareness category, got a gold, and then community participation from the Radio Sock 24-hour broadcast native Cope Galway. They had dozens of people in that day, and a huge development of that volunteer team as well. I think that everybody from Radio Sock who started off really learned an absolute ton, and they've gone on to run another one and will run more again as well. So absolute congratulations. But I will say that the standard this year was particularly high. There are some other years where people don't always get golds. They might get silvers or bronze, or in fact not get an award because they haven't filled out, they just entered the wrong category or haven't actually given us enough information. Lots of golds this year, but I think it's because people are realising the strengths and actually entering the correct shows and really filling out the information. So it was phenomenal. Some other categories would have been commissioned programming and then volunteer team as well. And I think there was something like, I think we'd, I can't even remember, I think 13 stations sent in something like 28, and I'd say like a good maybe 22 of those got some kind of an award, but there were lots of golds, a record number this year.
Very important recognition for programming in the sector. So very finally, Paula, another feature of the CRAIL, the Community Radio Ireland FELA, are the aspirant stations, stations that are up and coming. Was there anybody interesting in Leixlip this year in terms of developing new stations?
Well, so we had Together FM were up there, and they're from Ballyfermot as far as I remember. Yep, so Together FM were up there, and that was great. And less about the stations that were up there, because it was more that they were there, but there's also another couple of stations that I was mentioning that are quite interesting. We've got Loughrea Community Radio, and there's murmurings about a group in Headford as well, so it's coming right back close to home.
Oh my goodness, we'd have so many competition stations on our doorstep.
I don't mind, like, bring it on, the more the merrier. We can share programmes, you know, we can help each other out. That's what we're about. We're not in competition, we're going to help each other out, because, you know.
And are those both active then, Loughrea and Headford, being our neighbouring towns?
No, I haven't heard much about Headford, but Loughrea, definitely. They've chosen a logo, they're having meetings, they've had a fundraising night, and Warren Roots, who does a show on Thursday nights on the radio station, has been involved with them helping out with fundraisers and stuff as well. So I've extended the not the olive branch, I've just said, like, not even that, I just said, anything you need, let us know.
And the hand of friendship.
Exactly, because that's what it's about. There should be more stations in Ireland, you know. There's only 22 full-time licensed stations and another 6 or 7 seriously developing aspirants, but there should be 50. There should be at least one in every county, and not quite there yet, so.
Paula Healy, manager of Flirt FM, thanks very much for joining us today. Well, at the FELA, Kieran Cassan of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland and Sean O'Shochru of Nexus Research Cooperative spoke with Maria Murphy from the hosts of the festival, Liffey Sound FM, about the ongoing community media research project between the BAI and Community Radio Ireland. Maria began by asking Sean what the Nexus Research Cooperative does.
It's a research cooperative and we work on social development issues in Ireland and outside.
Development issues, and that's great. I'm Kieran Kassan from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. We're going to talk about what you were both here today, and you're talking about getting the community radio stations involved in looking at change, the most significant change and social benefit.
Yeah, well, what we're trying to do today, I find when I work with community radio stations, and I do it in a lot of different countries and in Ireland, and I've been involved myself in community television, you go in and you talk to people and you kind of realise they're doing really great work, very exciting work after a while, but sometimes they don't realise it. They kind of take it for granted. And part of what we're trying to do is to help the radio stations to capture the real social benefits and the real outcomes that they are actually generating. They know they're doing it, but they kind of don't go to the trouble of actually trying to find out, to document them, and to be able to show others, most important, that they're doing very, very valuable work.
So you're really trying to get us to look at analysing really some of the work that we do in some ways, even in a very, how would I say, simple is the word that comes to mind, but it's simple in the sense that you're actually looking at what the outcomes were, rather than saying, is anyone listening to me out there, etc. Knowing, having that knowledge that you are actually providing a good service.
That's right. And what you said was, is anyone listening out there? One of the dangers with community radio is that they themselves, or most people, compare them against commercial radio stations. And commercial radio stations, they judge themselves by how many listeners they have because they need to get the advertisers. And that is simply the wrong starting point for a community radio, because community radios are part of the local social infrastructure. They are tied in with the development and improvement and self-understanding of the local community. So with this particular approach, it's called Most Significant Change, or MSC, and it's applied all over the world in development projects. The methodology begins with talking to people themselves in the community and asking them, what difference has this radio station made to you? Can you tell us a story? It's a kind of story-based approach.
So it's kind of
about
engaging.
How it has helped. It engages, and not just with individuals, but of course with local volunteer groups and with local community development organisations. And it's really about trying to, from the bottom up, understand how the community values these stations, and then to record these in a kind of systematic way and to make it a much more scientific, if you like, approach, but building from small stories into big changes in communities. And I must say, the stations were very, very enthusiastic. Both Kieran and myself were really pleased and astonished by the depth and richness of the stories that we heard. We ran an hour over and people didn't
I know
leave.
You did, because I've been sitting here patiently, but I've had plenty of people to talk to me on radio here waiting for you to arrive. But Kieran, you're with the BAI. Now, I'm sure you're not just solely involved in community radio.
No. And as Sean said, I think we had a very powerful morning here. And Sean and I were involved in a long number of years ago looking previously at this whole question of how you evaluate the community development benefit of community radio stations. And it's something which is a recurring challenge, but this is a sort of a renewed approach to it, trying to look at it in the context of the current media landscape. And as Sean said, the traditionally radio stations are measured in terms of numbers of listeners, if you're in a commercial sense, or even in a public service sense, but within other contexts as well. But we're in a wholly changed and a very quickly evolving media environment, and within that you need to look at new ways to establish the benefits that are being delivered by all sorts of media outlets, and community radio stations are no different. But this tries to look at it in a holistic sense, not just in terms of the output of the radio service itself, but looking at all the other elements of value that are delivered. And I think we had a very powerful morning here with people telling their own stories about changes that had happened within their stations, but also very personal stories, and it was really a privilege to be able to be here.
So it was empowering and all that.
Yeah.
But actually, that measurement, when you're talking about measuring audience listenership, that's a very crude measurement, because it's simply just saying these are the listeners I have. It doesn't mean whether they're really engaging, just that they've turned on be it a music station or what, and that's just there. So it's a very crude measurement in that sense. Is there a tension, though, between that whole area of commercial radio and community radio?
I don't think it's a tension. I think it's one where there's differences between them. And what you have to do is try and look at what are the characteristics and the benefits that are delivered by a particular service. And in a community radio sense, it is not just about the output on air, it's about everything else that happens in around the station. And that was evident in the stories we heard this morning.
Yeah, I suppose I am. That's my experience, and my experience is that it does actually make, it's actually an asset to the community itself. And there's so much happens in the community that really is only of benefit, well, not quite only a benefit to their own community, but it's pertinent to the community that we live in. And that is really where community radio comes into its own. Any particular, how would say, gems of wisdom that you heard when it came to most significant change today, or you were awaiting all the responses?
Yeah, they are going to go away and write up these stories. I mean, there was such diversity in them that, you know, none of them really jumps for. One was, if you like, even going further, more amazing than the previous one. And it just went on like that. As Kieran was saying, it's not, very few of them were actually about listening, you know, the simple information that goes out on air. So many of them were about people who encountered the stations themselves and were personally hugely empowered, but also small organisations who began to engage with the station, and really things just expanded almost exponentially in terms of how they could do their work, these local voluntary organisations. So I think it's not just what the station does for individuals, it's also how they can expand and improve and reinforce the work of the other local organisations. I mean, for me, that was one of the major things coming
out. So it's this networking idea of networking together as a community. It actually will, I suppose, find some of the glue.
But I think there was also a commonality in terms of the kinds of themes that people were addressing, which you would expect where they were dealing with challenges within their own community in terms of people feeling more marginalised, more isolated, or else particular challenges around disability or things like that, which I think was heartening, because at the start of this process we sat down with a steering group which involved key members from the community radio sector to come up with a framework to try and define what is social benefit and what are the things you would look for in the operation of any community radio station to see if they are delivering that social benefit. And Sean came up with a theoretical framework based on looking at other literature and other experiences he has had. And I think as we listened this morning, you could see that the stories that were emerging very quickly mapped onto the framework that was there. So there is a real connection between what is a theoretically and a very robust theoretical framework and the actual practice on the ground. And what I really took from this morning is that when you ask people to begin to think about those things in a way to evaluate, are they having that impact, it was very clear that that made sense to them. And the stories they told and the things that they were identifying as value that the stations were creating very much matched that and were very powerful. So it's not like you're trying to in some instances, so if you take listenership within a community radio sector, it's a false measurement where people come up with funny numbers sometimes because they're trying to use a tool that doesn't match them. But this one very much was seen to be one that resonated with people, and the information is there. So I'm very positive about what we're going to get out of this over the next number of months.
Sean O'Shocru of Nexus, and important words there, I think, about the need to develop a methodology to investigate listenership of community radio, where pure numbers alone and the shareholder bottom line are not the main aims of the project. The interviewer was Maria Murphy of Liffey Sound FM, and we thank long-standing friend of this programme, Brian Green, for sending us that recording.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
On the occasion of the Community Radio Féile, we now feature one of the 21 full-time community radio stations broadcasting around Ireland, Phoenix FM, based in Blanchardstown in West Dublin. Phoenix originally went on the air in the 1980s as a pirate and made the transition into licensed community radio in the mid-1990s. Dublin 15 is one of the most diverse areas in the state due to immigration in recent years, and we wanted to find out how such communities were being served by their local station. Phoenix FM manager Lynn Simpson met us and we asked her to tell us the story of the station.
Well, Phoenix started not quite 30 years ago as a pirate station down in the old sort of main town centre, and it was just a little building outside Ryan's garage, but it always had the community ethos, and it was started by a few people who were really passionate about community radio and about the fact of giving people's voices on air, but to talk about the issues that were happening in the community. And I'm really pleased to say that actually most of those people who started all those years ago are still involved with the station. In fact, one of the original people is actually on our board, the current board at the moment. So it's lovely that people have always been involved, and it's been a part of the fabric community, even when it wasn't quite legal, which of course it is nowadays. It's always been part of Dublin 15. And Dublin 15 is one of the most diverse communities in the whole of Ireland. It's also the youngest community in the whole of Ireland. And that hasn't just happened. When you look at the breakdown of the people in the community, and it has really developed over the past 30 years, that community has changed and evolved and developed into this wonderful, diverse community. And what's really nice is the station has been part of that development and has been in the middle of it. So it's actually a really exciting station to be part of.
And can you take us through the schedule of Phoenix today? We have a very nice analogue schedule on the wall here with post-its with the names of programmes. It's very good to give us an overview in a very reliable and old-fashioned way of what's involved in the station. Can you take us through maybe some of the highlights of the schedule?
Well, certainly. Of course, we also have our digital schedule, but I always find that being a bit, I guess, old-fashioned myself in some things, I like a real good visual aid here. And I think it's so important to be able to just look at the board. So in the morning, of course, we start with music. Now, our Phoenix Rising show first thing in the morning is the most beautiful morning show. It's not a breakfast show. That's not what we're about. But it's about what's happening in our area at that time and that moment, and getting people started with the most gorgeous mix of music. And that runs 9 till 10 all the way through the week. But then we go into our flagship show, which is our D15 Today show. Now, although that runs from 10 to 12 every day, each day has a different team of people attached to it. And it's volunteer led. Now, we're very lucky in this that we actually have a TUS person attached to that show, because in that 2 hours, we have between 4 to 6 local guests or national guests talking about local issues on the show every single day. So whether that's on the phone or coming in the studio or it's being pre-recorded, every single day you can guarantee at the very least 4 people coming through the studio. And that's a lot of work that goes into that show. And it's very current affairs, but current affairs for Dublin 15, mm-hmm. current affairs for Ireland, and current affairs for national, international, but how it affects us as a community and how things are going to work for us. I mean, for example, it's the most beautiful show we had yesterday. We had somebody on talking from the Wheelchair Association talking about a campaign that they're running and how people locally could get involved with it. And then right next to the most beautiful choir coming on and singing from us, and it was from everybody who was originally from the Philippines who have now settled in Ireland, singing these fantastic songs live on air. It's one of those shows that is so diverse and really reflects the colour of the community on it. So it's a show we're very proud of, but of course we're very proud of all our shows. Our Lyrical Lunchtime is a perfect one to have a sandwich to, cup of tea, some absolutely brilliant music, always a little bit of Elvis and Frank Sinatra in there, I can guarantee, and presenters who have been with the station since the very beginning. It's a wonderful show. In the afternoons, we go into more of our speech-based shows. So that's our Getting to Know Yous, our Motivational Journeys, our Genius Hack, which is a lovely show, 2 young people all about science, which you wouldn't think would make great radio, but actually does. Our Women to Women, and of course, our Access All Areas show, which is a show that's very important to the station. That's run in conjunction with the Blanchardstown Centre for Independent Living. That's our Advocacy and Disability show. So everybody who's involved in the show has come through the Blanchardstown Centre for Independent Living. They produce the show, present the show, and technical support for the show in there. And it's an hour opportunity to talk about the issues that affect them, but also the issues that are not happening anywhere else. And I think this is such an important show that people have their voice, that they're allowed to come on and talk about the issues. Where else have they got that platform? I mean, it's very privileged to offer a platform to people, full stop, but to be able to talk about issues that aren't being talked about anywhere else. Recently, we had a young woman on who has no verbal communication and spoke to us through a computer. Where else would she be given airspace to just talk about what was important to her, but also the love of the music she loves? She's as much right to come on and talk about and educate us on her love of music as anyone else has. So it was such an important show, really, and we're huge campaigners for wheelchair access, which is phenomenal. A big thing at the moment is they're looking at making places more wheelchair accessible, and they're part of that campaign and having people on and talking about it. Then we go into our sort of later afternoon, which is our after tunes, and that's a little bit, we get a little bit younger. It's a sort of younger people breaking through. Some people are studying, some people have just finished studying, and it's a wonderful opportunity for the young, at the moment, men, but not exclusively men, young men coming through who are wanting to break into radio. It's a chance for them to build up their portfolio, make their mistakes on air and get things right, see what works for them and find their voice on air and play the music that they love. Into our home run, which is our drive time, but local drive time with the fabulous Joe, and each day has a different flavour. So from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, you're always going to have the best upbeat music. And in the evening, it's more into our specialist programming. So our Irish language programming, our specialist music. On a Friday, we have Garsi Gartak, which is our show in Urdu, talking to the Urdu community in Dublin 15. To our indie disco, which is two fabulous young ladies who are really broke into the indie circuit and talking to some great up-and-coming acts who come in there. When they're doing national campaigns, they stop at Phoenix because of these young ladies. It's wonderful. And into Rebel Radio, which is our hardcore metal for all those metal heads out there. And it's actually won national awards, which is fantastic. Now, it's not just the shows that are diverse here, though. It's also the presenters. Each show wouldn't happen without the fabulous volunteers giving their time to come and do this. And everybody volunteers for a different reason here. For some, it's because this is their passion and what they hope to see in their future. For some people, it's something they'd always wanted to do and never had the opportunity to do it. And now they're retired, they can. And for some people, it's just a fantastic hobby. And for others, it's the fact they have a message and a story that they want to tell and get out there. And I think that's the beauty of community radio, that everybody's welcome. All you need is the passion and enthusiasm. We have people coming through our door who have been turned away from other stations, national into, you know, stations coming in. We had one gentleman who came to us, this young gentleman had Down syndrome, but wanted to present. He wasn't hugely verbal, but he had something to say and he wanted to communicate his love of ABBA. And that's what he wanted to talk about, ABBA. And so he joined our Access All Areas show and for 6 months was a co-presenter on that show on there, having been turned away from three different stations for work experience. He just joined us as a volunteer, as a member of the team. So I think in every community station has that story and has so many stories behind each hour of a show that goes out. There's all these stories of these people that are making these wonderful shows.
And how many volunteers roughly do you have?
We have 83 active volunteers. Now, active volunteers are people through the station on a regular basis. We also have, I think, about 50 volunteers who are on top of that, who are attached to the station, but might not be active regular contributors, depending on their work schedules, etc. on the air.
What are the challenges involved in keeping Phoenix FM on the air as a community station? Obviously, there are a lot of challenges in the community sector at the moment.
I think it's the same as every community sector. It's obviously going to be its money, its income, how to generate it. We operate as a social enterprise. So we bring money through the door, for example, through sponsorship and promotion. We bring it through training, through sound and vision projects for the BAI, of course, and that's a lot for community stations that are involved in that. We also, on occasions, have our studios, our facilities are rented out for there. And sometimes we get donations and, of course, fundraising, the good old-fashioned table quizzes, packing bags at Tesco's. So the challenge is keeping the money coming through the door so that we can do the wonderful work we do. But that's the same for every community organisation. You know, we still have to pay the electricity bills. We still have to pay our licence. We still have to pay all those bills, members of staff, etc., to keep us on the air. But we have to also look at, we're a community organisation, and are we fulfilling our community ethos as well as we go along? So that's the challenges. Luckily, what we do have is wonderful staff who go over and above. And I think you find that in community radio, the people who the station, because stations become their second home. And without the passion of these people, I don't think community stations would ever work. So for every challenge in there, there's a wonderful people there rising to the challenge and keeping us on there. So I think that's a big thing. And we were talking earlier off here about the reflecting your community and how difficult that can be. That's a big challenge as well. Dublin 15 is, as I said earlier, the most diverse community in Ireland. And to be able to reflect that on air, whether that's in specialist programming or whether it's encouraging people from different, you know, sub-communities within the community into the door to work with, I think it's just making sure you have an open door policy and encouraging people and going, but not also waiting for people to come to you, to going out into the community as well, making sure that you're at events covering them, making sure that you're going out and doing outside broadcasts, inviting people in. And we recently did a lovely thing where we threw open our doors and had an open house, and people walking past were invited to come in and see our studios, talk to the staff and see that volunteers, people volunteering here, were just the same as them, just, you know, their neighbours, the people they would bump into the shops were here in broadcasting. So the challenge is, I think, money and making sure that you're reflecting your station, your community to which you're broadcasting. But also, as I said, when you've got 80, 83 volunteers coming to the door, making sure that everybody's needs are fulfilled as well.
And to what extent would you see social media as a challenge to Phoenix as a community station? To what extent do you think is it an issue for the community radio sector, the fact that social media is so dominant now in the media landscape?
Well, technology isn't going anywhere. So we have to learn to work with it. So we actually have a wonderful communications person who's come to us through the TUS scheme. And it's about reflecting what's going out on air, making sure that that's going out there on Facebook, Twitter. But podcasting is so important. It really is. We can't ever just look at what we're working on here. It's dual platform now, and we have to take these opportunities. Often in the past, wonderful programmes were made and they were gone. So that hour, if you didn't catch them, it was an appointment to listen. But people don't listen that anyway anymore. They listen on their phones, they're listening on their laptops, the Alexa apps, etc. And we have to rise to that. So making sure that where we can, our programmes are podcasted on there. But also using it as a promotional tool, social media, what's coming up, what we're doing, and also showing what we have been doing, using it to show the events we were at, showing it, and, you know, it's wonderful, and reaching out as well to different communities through Facebook, tagging them, inviting them in. We have a community centre at the moment who's in danger of closing. And we knew about that at first, initially, from their Facebook account. So we were able to choose that. So we were actually in with us tomorrow, telling us about how they are fighting to keep their community station, their community centre open. And that's going to be such a huge campaign for us to be involved in. And that came to us through social media. We were able to reach out to them and draw them into us. So I think it depends, like any technology, it depends how you use it and how you facilitate it. And yeah, people say for a while that radio is, you know, the Cinderella media. I don't believe that for a second. I think it's the true media. I think it's a true reflection of what's happening in the community, because who else is talking about, for example, this community station? Who else is telling the public what's going on with them? It's not been covered by the big stations. So I don't see it as a Cinderella. We might be as poor as Cinderella, but I see that we're even more important than that.
Where would you like to see Phoenix FM in 5 years' time, Lynn?
Oh, wow, that's a really big question. My goodness. I think with community stations, you always have to be moving forward. You've got to be hitting the milestones in there. For example, last year we went 24/7, which was a big milestone for us. With 83 volunteers coming through, with 12 members of staff, and that includes CE2s and Pobble staff, and 10 board members, we operate from two rooms. So our hope would be in the future that we'd be looking at moving to larger premises, premises that can facilitate that. I've been to visit other care, some of our sister community stations, and I'm always very jealous when they have a green room, a place where presenters can sit down and talk to their guests before they go on air. How wonderful. And a little kitchen and things like where staff can sit down and talk through ideas and a room like that. So I think for us, I think the big thing in the future would be moving to premises that just give us that little bit more space so we can facilitate some of the ideas and some of the training and things that we want to do. We're kind of bursting at the seams a little bit, not just with size, but with ideas and things that we want to do. And that's going to come down to space. So I think that's for me. Now, what I'd really like to see as well for personally for Phoenix is to see that we're really carry on as part of the community, that community groups see us as the first stop when they have something they want to see and tell us about, and that we're integrated into the community, and that we could truly reflect that, not just in our programming, but in the volunteers that come through the door. So for me, I think that's a personal goal for the station, but obviously to carry on doing the wonderful broadcasting that we're doing, have perhaps a little bit more money coming through the door. How wonderful it would be if our government would see the value of community groups, in particular community radio, and if funding could be put in place for groups like that so that they can operate. I always say that Phoenix is not just about radio. Community radio isn't just about radio. It's about the opportunities that we give people. I got the opportunity to come into this wonderful career through community radio 25 years ago. One person said, come on into our studios and take a look. And 25 years later, this has been my life. I got a degree in radio. I got a master's in radio. I worked for the BBC. I worked for commercial radio. I moved to a different country and found a community through radio and through community radio. So for me, that value had changed my life. And that's one person. If the government could see the power of what we do here and the power of the development of people when they walk in the door and to when they leave or carry on with us, I think if they could see the power of that, of advocacy and giving people a voice and a space for creativity, I think they would definitely think about giving the funding towards more community radio.
Lynn Simpson, manager of Phoenix FM in Dublin, and you can listen online at phoenixfm.ie or in West Dublin on 92.5 FM.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
We brought you a fascinating interview last month about tribal radio in the US, recorded in Siena in Italy at the conference of the European Communication Research and Education Association. This month we bring you another interview about community radio and cultural diversity. Brian Green caught up with Larry McCauley, who's based in Hamburg in Germany, but originally from Nigeria, and asked him about his involvement in the Refugee Radio Network.
Hello, listeners. My name is Larry McCauley, founder of Refugee Radio Network. Refugee Radio Network is a platform developed by refugees for refugees that allows refugees, asylum seekers to have a voice and representation on radio, on media. And we're also involved into conference. So we have the Conference on Migration and Media Awareness 2020 coming up. And the CMMA is all about refugees organizing a conference by themselves with the civil society to dialogue, to talk, to share ideas, brainstorm, and to make recommendations to policymakers.
Refugee radio was featured in World Radio Day in 2016, and it's where I first came across your good self, and I've just recognised you here on the steps in the sun in Siena. Did you bring radio with you as a skill when you came to Hamburg, or is it something you picked up there?
Well, I had radio experience as a student radio activist back in my country, and we used radio at that time to advocate for democratic rights when we were under a military government. So that has been there. So when I came to Hamburg and Europe, I found that there was a deficit of people, of migrants, marginalized groups having their own voice. So it's always mainstream media that tells a story on our behalf. So that was what gave birth to Refugee Radio, that why don't we just have our own interpretation?
It seems like Hamburg is not a place enough for Refugee Radio. It needs to be in many reception centres around the world. How are the European Broadcasting Union and the United Nations helping you to spread your wings?
Well, for the United Nations, nothing. It's basically a DIY process. What we did when we started Refugee Radio was just for Hamburg, our local community. But as time went on, we started receiving messages. So we started traveling also. We started taking the radio on the road, have workshops to teach people in different localities on how to create their own refugee radio and also to share it on the platform that we have created. So that's what has been happening. And when we started, we were like the only one on mainland Europe. But now we have more than 30, 40 radio projects along migration and refugee rights advocacy. Also, mainstream media has jumped on it. But of course, the community media was the first to really identify that this is necessary.
Is there a template for a community radio station in Scotland or Ireland to adopt a kind of a way of bringing a refugee radio show onto their airwaves?
Yeah, we have a couple of friends in the community media in England, in Ireland. We've worked with a couple of friends also, colleagues, who are Irish journalists and activists. The names...
Have you worked with Near FM in Dublin?
I know Near FM, but I've not worked with them, but I know them. They were in my conference. One of them is a member of the Community Media Forum Europe, so we collaborate a lot. I was in Ireland last year, so with a colleague of mine who was also a guest at my conference. So I'm also using this opportunity to invite the listeners, media activists, bloggers, to make sure you'll be in Hamburg. It's a free event, Conference on Migration Media Awareness 2020, November. In the city of Hamburg, it's electric. Never seen anything like it before. It's media, arts, entertainment, you name it.
You've sold it like a tour guide. Final question. If I could give you a magic wand, what would you change in your world of radio and refugee radio and other projects?
Well, it's just to connect with the people, with the radio voice, bumping from your radio sets in your car, in your kitchen rooms, living rooms. Let people connect with that voice, that authentic voice that tells the real story of life.
A crucial radio initiative for our troubled times. Larry McCauley talking about the Refugee Radio Network to Brian Green at the recent conference of the European Communication Research and Education Association in Siena. And that brings us to the end of this month's edition of Wireless on Flirt FM. Join us again on the first Monday in December for more radio news and features from home and abroad, including an interview with Dr. Dahi McMahon about the RTE Longwave service. Our apologies that we weren't able to bring you that this month as planned. I hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. You can also listen to previous shows on wirelessflirt.radio.ie, where you can also subscribe to podcasts on a variety of platforms. Until the next edition of Wireless, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.